Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. It's often expressed that one of our greatest hopes as a community is our children will grow with healthy minds, bodies, and spirits that will enable them to maximize their potential. It's been almost a year since the launch of the Children's Bills of Rights here in San Luis Obispo County, and today I'll be talking with my guests, Susan Hughes, Executive Director, and Misty Livenhood, Communications and Outreach Officer of First Five San Luis Obispo County, about how the Bill of Rights for Children came to be, who was involved, why it's important, and what it means for this county. You're invited to bring your voice into our conversation today by calling 781-3875. And Misty and Susan, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
Likewise.
A good place, I think, to start is really how this came about. The idea of a children's bill of rights sounds like a huge undertaking, or it could be just somebody sat down and wrote a document. So
I could tell you a little bit about that.
I'd love it.
Well, back in 2010 or so, as the First Five Commission was creating its 2011 to 15 strategic plan, one of the pieces of our plan is a policy and advocacy component. And that's something the commission hadn't really done much of in the past, because in general we fund programs for kids 0 to 5. But as our funding, which is we're funded by tobacco tax, and we knew long ago, because smoking's going down, which is a very good thing,
sure,
that our revenues would go down. And so with this current plan, the commission said, you know, one of the other things we really need to do for our children is not just give programs money, but also advocate for their well-being. So we have a good policy platform in our plan with strategies and activities, and one of those activities was creating a children's bill of rights, which actually, you know, other communities from San Mateo County to Merced County in California to even the state of California have a children's bill of rights, as does Oregon, I think Portland, Oregon has one. And so this is not a super new concept, but we decided we wanted a children's bill of rights for SLO County, specific to our county. And so we undertook that project in about 3 years ago, and invited many members of the community around the table. It did not get written in a room by itself by two or three people. The commission made the decision that it would be very, very important for as many community members and youth to participate in the process of development of the rights, that to make the community own the rights. And after we got it all done, even though it did seem like an arduous but fun process, it's true that it's specific to our community. And we're different than other communities. And if you read some of the other children's bill of rights, you can see that difference. And so we're pretty proud that it's so SLO County specific.
What kind of agencies came together? I mean, who did you even reach out to with this concept?
Well, we reached out to representatives from the county and the public health department, Department of Social Services, even the county admin offices. We also worked with a lot of nonprofits, United Way, the United Way Youth Board, some individuals, the Montessori School in town, Cal Poly. I think we had 109 Well, we had a kind of a steering group of folks that were about 30 folks of various organizations, both nonprofit and government. And then we did, several community meetings, and I think over 109 adults, and we included about 35 youth, all the way from fourth graders up to seniors in high school.
So you included the kids in this planning process or in the discussion?
Very definitely, and we all consider that a very important piece, because these rights are for the children, for the youth, and it was the older kids' perspectives and care and thoughtful moments were some of the most impressive that we had around the tables. Mm-hmm. I think they developed rights, some of the rights that were not the basic rights, but more of the rights of where they'd like to be and what they'd like to have in order to achieve their dreams. And then you go down to the fourth graders who, after reviewing the, I think we had 11 rights at the time, they said, but there's no rights about having friends. What's that about? So we went, you're right. There's no and friends are so important to, sure. you know, to grow up with and to have. And so we added a right on friends. So the youth were real important to the process.
Yeah. Misty, with the Bill of Rights for Children, what's the purpose of it? What's the overall intent?
Well, I think there's, you know, there are several layers here to look at, but I think one of the most important aspects of this framework is that it is a way to provide a unifying foundation for so many agencies and individuals who are daily working on behalf of our children already. We may be doing our own thing individually, but this is a way that we can really harness all that energy and really come together and have something to hold up and say, hey, you know, this is a lens through which we can look to make sure that children are our highest priority when we're making even the most basic daily decisions. And to piggyback off of what Susan said earlier, you know, I have to say coming in at this and seeing the excitement that enthusiasm and intensity on behalf of the youth participants is amazing. I mean, they are the core of this campaign, and we couldn't have better ambassadors. I mean, we can sit in our little rooms and speak industry speak, but they really make it resonate, and they know how to connect, and they know how to articulate their hopes and their aspirations. And so their involvement in this, I think, is really why it hits home for people.
What, Susan, did the kids think would happen with this Bill of Rights? Did they talk about what they thought would come about as a result of this, or what they hoped for?
Well, we did have some of them say, let's see what happens next, because I think that, you know, at that point, to be honest with you, we weren't even sure how how it was all going to come down. But they all continued. Well, here's an example, though, that we were able to involve the kids and bring some awareness to others that might not have had it so far. We've involved them in the city of San Luis actually did a proclamation for the rights, and the youth were there and accepted it and were part of it. And just that experience widened their horizons.
Sure.
And so as we go down the road, one of the things that we want to do, I'm calling it Children's Bill of Rights Stage 2, now that we have developed rights, what are we going to do with them? We want to provide more opportunities like that for the youth to go out and, as Misty said, be ambassadors for us in the community. Because it really, you know, we like to say our children are future, and that's who they are. And so it's going to be up to them to a certain extent to say, I need a stable house to live, or a stable household, and I need good plentiful food. And so how can we work together to help the community do that for us? And so I think as time goes by, they'll see more and more ways they can participate. And each time when you're talking to somebody about this and the light bulb goes on, it's like, wow. You know, and they get it, and then so each person becomes a spokesperson to the next person, and that's kind of a neat way to do things, I think.
Was there any pushback initially on this? Because you mentioned a light bulb goes on for people, and they kind of go, wow, you know, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. And we could go through what some of the, I mean, an example is, you know, one of the rights is eating healthy and plentiful meals every day. And, you know, you have on your website, which I think, you know, encouraging people to go to be able to see the development. You've got some excellent videos there that are interviews with people that participated in the process and the kids. But just in that, I think there's a statistic that is cited that 40% of the meals that are served with the food bank are to children.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good, you know, linking this back. I know this is a program sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities. So linking this back to the Children's Bill of Rights, one of the things in Stage 2 that we're doing is we actually have developed an evaluation component for the Bill of Rights, and we've just published the first children's folio that's been done in quite a long time with data in that will hopefully help us measure how well we're doing relative to all the rights. And I think that's a really important piece for our community to see that, yes, you know, it, as Misty says, it gives everybody a universal vision.
Right.
And they can focus. Maybe the stable home environment is what they want to work on, or the plentiful food is what they want to work on. And they can push that indicator up to be better as it relates to kids. So I think that, you know, that's one of the next stage important steps that we need to take. Relative to, you know, a little pushback, mm-hmm. We've discussed the fact that some folks think that the title Children's Bill of Rights, that might bring another vision to some people than it does to us. And so we have, quite honestly, had a little bit of a pushback.
Is there a concern that somehow that would imply that there's a usurping of parent rights or responsibilities?
That has been suggested. Okay. There's no doubt about that. But obviously, that's not our intention.
Right.
It is a framework by which we can unify the community to make kids our first priority. And so, you know, we think that as time goes by, folks will understand that. I mean, if the community begins to use the Bill of Rights, they have the framework that they can go to, even they could go to a policymaker and say, in every decision that you make, please consider the children.
Right.
And mm-hmm. and so we, you know, ultimately that would be one way you could use the rights. In another way, though, is parent education and community education. And as you do that, you change norms. We all know that. I used to be in tobacco control, and we used to educate on secondhand smoke. Well, look where we are now. We all know how bad it is. So the rights could be used in that way, and that's really the intention of it. It's not to take any kind of control from the parental family unit or anything like that. It really is to give folks something on which to base their decisions when they work with our children.
And it doesn't sound like it's to give anybody a club. It's to provide a map.
That's good.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I just to add to that, you know, I actually look at it in a way that this is a tool that can help enhance and empower and supplement an already existing network of care and counsel. So it's meant to support families and parents and actually increase their abilities to help as far as growing our families and making sure our children are thriving. So it's there as a support and as an enhancement to the already existing responsibilities and that we have as parents, in my opinion.
Well, I think, too, you know, as organizations are planning – being able to have something for any organization that is looking at providing services for children to target those services, if they're working off of the same page and they're looking at is what I'm planning or what I'm looking at expending my resources for addressing some of the things that have been identified through the community as necessary, it seems as though it would make a better fit.
And really, you just hit the nail on the head. One of the things that we're encouraging agencies to do as they go to their strategic planning process is to take a look at the rights and incorporate the rights in everything they do. We've done I think Misty just did a outreach presentation to Department of Social Services, and that was with the intent that all the workers begin to know and become familiar with the rights so that they can begin to implement the rights out into the community as they do work with those families receiving services. So there's all sorts of ways, and that commonality is something that I think everyone will appreciate once they figure it all out.
Yeah.
And I think another beautiful aspect is that when you look at what's going on in the community already, so many of these agencies and individuals are doing things that are already a direct reflection of these rights. And I have a little bit of fun with this from a communication standpoint, because certainly social media is a great place to start the conversation. And we're just amazed on a daily basis at the different activities. For instance, you look at Make a Difference Day. Well, there's number 11 on the Children's Bill of Rights. You look at the Munchkin March, which is, you know, to benefit the food bank, number 2 on the Bill of Rights. You look at a new park opening in Paso Robles, and you're talking about, you know, outdoor experiences and recreational activity and physical activity for our children. So much is already going on, and our hope is that not only can we, you know, expand some of those existing programs and activities, but maybe prompt some new ideas and ways and approaches to lift this up a little bit more.
Okay. Well, I'm Chris Kington Barker here with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX Public Radio 90.1. My guests are Susan Hughes, Executive Director, and Misty Livenhood, Communications and Outreach Officer for First Five San Luis Obispo County. And our topic today is Children's Bill of Rights for San Luis Obispo County. If you have a question, comment, you'd like to come into the conversation, we'd love to have you join us. And you can do so by calling us at 781-3875. And Misty, you were just mentioning about the different Bill of Rights and how they fit in with different activities that are going on. And I'm wondering if, you know, we kind of, the name Bill of Rights, I think sometimes comes across as though it's almost provocative in a way. It really is also just kind of establishing what is necessary for healthy children.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. It just is kids and people who take care of kids and understand and provide for kids have gotten together and outlined these, 12 different items that for a healthy, well-rounded human being and a little person or a growing person is necessary. I can see how something like this could really be used as an evaluative tool of, do these children have these things? And if a component is missing, having that be something that is honed in on to try and provide those services for that child or that child directed to those services.
Exactly. I think that that's true. And I think that's where that common ground will come in, too. If we can, you know, it's a agreed upon 12 rights. They, interestingly enough, and we didn't plan it this way, start with very basic values like shelter and food,
right,
and safety and that sort of thing. And then they get up to that area of the dreams where the children really dream on, which still sends chills up and down me when I, because that all came from them. Yes. But I think that, you know, one of the other things that stage two, that's happening in stage two is, you know, First Five is really focused on 0 to 5 kids and families. And so even though we've been behind and will continue to support the project, the 6 to 18-year-olds, we the other decision the commission made was they wanted all children, not just, we didn't want rights for 0 to 5ers. We wanted rights for 0 to 18s. So from the get-go, we wanted to make sure that we found organizations who could focus in on the 6 to 18-year-olds. We've recently connected with the Asset Development Network, which many, many years ago brought the 40 developmental assets to our community. And this group has worked hard on educating teachers and parents and the community on what the 40 developmental assets. And we said, well, just as a fun project, let's look at the rights and let's look at the assets and let's see what happens. Do they merge?
Can you explain to me what the assets are or what defines the assets?
It's something that the Research Institute, I think, back in Chicago did years and years ago. And these are assets that include positive relationships and opportunities, competencies, values, and self-perceptions that youth need to succeed. In other words, they're things like family support, having good adult relationships. So it's it's a framework from a different perspective.
Right.
And when we sat down and actually tied the rights to the assets, they mirrored completely. It was a great project. And so going out together with the Asset Development Network, with that education behind us and those groups behind us, will allow us to really do the whole 0 to 18. And it's been a great partnership, and I have high hopes that it will continue to be. So now that the rights are developed and we've made this new partnership, the First Five logo we want to make it the Children's Bill of Rights logo come out to the first.
Right.
They'll see that first, and all those folks that are supporting it second. And that was always one of the objectives, although since I'm kind of a controlling person, that was a hard thing for me. But
to give that up.
To give that up. And but at the same time, for the community to own it, we needed to do that. And first, I know the commission is very pleased that we've been able to expand our horizons that way, and really are glad that the community has embraced the rights. As
now,
they
which
have.
Commission is it that did that started this?
The first five commission.
The first five
yeah.
commission.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's who we actually work for. They're our bosses, and that's their strategic plan that we're implementing. So, as I said, this is a piece of our advocacy platform, and that we'll be able to use from here on out. Measuring it, like I said, we'll be working with Action to measure it through indicators in the children's folio. We'll measure it, how many presentations, the community awareness survey. So this isn't just something that's going to come and go. It's going to be embedded in the community, and eventually, hopefully, we'll be able to say kids are our first priority.
Is this used in schools at all?
Well, we're actually that's where we are in the process as far as implementation goes. We're continuing the conversation, and now we're working together to figure out the best way to implement this. And certainly parent advocacy and the support systems that are at schools are of high interest to us because we want to get that word out to families. So right now we're in the process of tailoring what we call our toolkits to get materials together for families and for schools, and are just beginning that outreach now as we speak. But that's an important component to, I think, our advocacy and our getting the word out.
Yeah, and I can see that even scouting groups, or it seems like children's organizations, after school programs, in school programs, PTAs, it seems as though it's got applications for softball teams, for
all of those,
just
right?
About anything to look at as a useful kind of a map.
You know, we've had organizations all the way from the League of Women Voters to a private pediatrician endorse the rights, and we welcome that. One of the things that we're kind of a small staff, and one of the nice things about enlarging our support group about this is that we can do more presentations and community outreach, and hopefully with the toolkits that we're developing, others will be able to just take it on and do it themselves. But again, we're in our first year anniversary almost.
In April.
In April.
We publicly unveiled last April.
Yeah.
And it's in the interest and the inquiries through our office just for presentations and more information has been it's been well received, and we're really excited about the momentum and are just now, I think, on the verge of really seeing kind of a surge in interest and outreach. So
how has this been used in other communities that have had it longer than a year?
Well, I know that in Merced County, they continue to hold a children's summit annually around the Bill of Rights, and then kind of gather data and anecdotal stories on how it was used. I be honest with you, I can't tell you specifics,
okay.
But
okay.
I know from early on, because that question was asked to us too by the commission as we were proposing we do this, even in the early days, how we're going to use this, you know, what good is it going to be for our community? And I think the important piece that everyone around what I would call the steering group table at this point understands, we can't just, you know, this won't be done and then put on the shelf. That
yeah.
We do need this stage too, in particular, how do you raise awareness, because, and how do you measure that awareness, and how do you create ownership in the community? And again, we've been fortunate to get people around the table who have all sorts of different talents and knowledge in order to do that. But that's a challenge. You know, it could just be. You know, here it is, good deal, bye.
Now, right.
Yeah,
It was a nice exercise. It was
yeah.
warm and fuzzy,
yeah,
and then it
yeah.
goes away.
Yeah, but it's that obviously the intention is not that,
mm-hmm.
and I think we've taken many first steps to avoid that with enlarging our support group.
And, you know, in addition to that, I'd just like to say, yeah, we look at this as a document, but it's a living, breathing document. And so part of what we're trying to do when we're engaging with audiences in our presentation is look at some very simple strategies. For instance, parents, reading to your children, you know, an hour a day, taking them to a youth symphony event where you're supporting other young artists, but you're also exposing your own children to music and the arts. If we look at employers, we can say, okay, let's look at family life, professional and personal balance and time off and paid leave and after hours type events for parents who are working. If we're looking at state and local leaders, what kind of policies can they put into place that are helping to create healthy environments for our families and our children, whether it be community gardens, whether it be nutrition classes, healthcare resources, and things of that nature. So we're really trying to break it down and make it simple for people to comprehend in terms of how they can implement this and exercise it on a daily basis.
I think, Misty, you bring up a good point, because even though it's the Children's Bill of Rights, children don't raise themselves in a vacuum. So in order for them to have a quality life, the parents also need to be participative in it. And things that you mentioned, like being able to have the resources to say, you know, I need to be able to provide time for me and my family to get outdoor activity, physical exercise, time to spend together, adequate food, you know, shelter, are not just things for the children. It's also for the whole family unit.
Yeah, and I think we can define family in different ways. Because technically, when I look back at my life and growing up, my teachers, my neighbors, and even the family doctor was considered extended family. They all mm-hmm. had a very important role in my life and made a profound impact. So whether or not we have children who are little ones or, you know, on their way up to being 18 or still continuing the journey, I don't think that we can diminish our impact no matter what role we're playing on the life of a child.
Mm-hmm. And to be able to, because this was created for San Luis Obispo County and the document looks different than, say, it did for Marin County or Oregon or other areas where it's created, I would think that it needs to be revisited periodically to take a look at whether or not it still reflects the needs of the kids.
Oh, very definitely.
In that community.
Yeah, very definitely. And again, that's one reason we want to take a look and make sure we measure it. You know, if we've we want to make sure that we've got data that supports it so we can trend data. I mean, we really are. We do have a couple of geeks on our committee that love data, and we'll be monitoring that all along. And, you know, as we change in 10 years, who knows what SLO County might look like. And so I think we would be kind of foolish to say this is stamped, never to be changed.
How does it affect what you're doing with First Five?
Well, again, it just allows us the framework to go out and advocate in a more specific way for our kids and to have a consistent message. Misty's the messenger, the communications officer at First Five, so she's working on me to be consistent in my message, and this helps me do that, and I know it helps her do that. And we've for instance engaged all of our funded partners in the Children's Bill of Rights and talk to them about it and urge them to work with their agencies to incorporate what they do on a daily basis using this framework, whether it be in their strategic plan or just training their workers to in what the Bill of Rights are all about. So that's how you kind of, you know, that norm change I was talking about earlier, everybody begins to learn the concept and think, oh, yeah, you're right, this reflects back to the Bill of Rights. These kids deserve healthy food, you know, so I'm going to go donate to the food bank.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, and for instance, one of the things, and I think this is what you were talking about, probably came from the kids, be encouraged to dream big, to grow through challenge and mistakes, and to always live with hope and aspiration.
That's definitely one of the youth.
That was one of theirs. Yeah.
Yeah, they really start kind of with, you know, the number one is, as I said before, basic, and then it gets to this, to these just hopes and dreams pieces, one that gets to about 9 to 10, 11 to 12. And really, that's what came from the youth.
And how do you measure that, though?
Well, that's That's a good, we've asked that question. Yeah, we haven't quite gotten there yet. I have some data tied to some of the other rights, but yeah. That's a good one. We're actually going to do some surveys of youth, too, in all of this. Thank goodness for SurveyMonkey and those types of things
right.
to kind of try and get a baseline of, first of all, are they aware of it? Because we need to make more and more youth aware of it as well as adults in our community. But then over time, see, you know, have them kind of help us rate. Where do they feel they are? You know, have they seen a change? And so that's one of our ideas about how we can do that. One of the other things we've had talks about, we haven't had a chance to really implement, is anybody who'd like to adopt a right, you know, within their service club or in their church or wherever, they could just adopt and own a right and really work on that right and make a difference.
What would that look like for someone to adopt a right?
Well, if they, you know, I would think if they talked about safety,
feel
and safe
everywhere we go.
All the folks could just make sure and watch out for kids. Do that, you know, when they're on the street walking, when they're in the car driving, when they're, you know, at an event, just always be aware, you know, of the safety of children, and make their organization safer for kids, that sort of thing.
It's an interesting concept, yeah. So you're talking about rather than adopting the practice of putting that into effect.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting concept. You are listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX Public Radio and streaming on the web at www.kcbx.org. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. Susan Hughes and Misty Livenhood of First Five San Luis Obispo County have joined me today, and we're talking about the Children's Bill of Rights established for San Luis Obispo County, how it got started, why, and some common misperceptions about the intent or meaning behind it. If you have comments or questions today, or you just want to bring up something that is relevant to our topic that you'd like to have heard by Misty and Susan, please call us at 781-3875. Going back to one of our Bill of Rights is visit a doctor, dentist, counselor when needed to help us stay physically and mentally healthy. And, you know, that... well, that, and there's...
There's all sorts of barriers and challenges right, to that yeah. one, obviously. But, you know, again, that could start with... just parents being aware that you need to brush your kids' teeth, you know, as early as possible. So it can take on the form of education of parents, or it could be, you know, just in a larger sense, the community working for just better access to health care for all of us. And of course, that's an issue we're all working on this
correct.
This year.
Right.
But, you know, I think that, and one of the other pieces of this one said it talks about mentally healthy.
Exactly.
Which was an interesting
yes.
concept to me,
did
too.
Did the kids participate in that one, too? Was there any discussion with the kids about mentally healthy, or that came more for the adults?
It probably came more a little bit from the adults. I mean, mm-hmm. when we actually went out after we had some of these partly developed, we talked to the older youth a little bit about that. And that's a hard concept to get.
For little ones, yeah.
yeah. But I think that some of our youth have had challenges in their lives with their families, some of the ones that we talk to, and they understand that stress involved in family life and the need to maybe be able to go talk to another adult about it and feel safe about doing that.
Right.
So they got some of that concept. And we all now understand, too, you can be physically healthy, but you've really got to be mentally healthy, too, to be really healthy. So I was really pleased when that piece went in.
Yeah, and to be able to have those things available is the other piece of it.
Yeah.
So
yeah. The access piece is always a problem. But again, you know, so there's, I think, like one of the statistics that came out of Action's report that is of interest and that links right up to this right is 17.2% of parents say their child has never visited a dentist, never, ever visited a dentist. But 80.6% of parents say they had visited a dentist in the last year. So we're doing okay there, but it's not acceptable to even have 17% that haven't visited the dentist. So, you know, whether the WIC program begins to do more and more on oral health education, or the Dental Hygienist Association starts some outreach with parents and education, that's the kind of thing that they could take that right and run with it from their perspective of expertise.
Talk a little bit about First Five and what that program is. What was First Five tasked with doing?
Well, back in 1998, there was a ballot measure, Proposition 10, that was passed by the voters that added 25 cents on tobacco, each pack of cigarettes. And you may recall Rob Reiner, Meathead.
Right.
He actually was the person behind the effort and helped to get it passed. And so that every county gets money from the 25-cent tax, and it's
proportional. And it's still in effect.
It's still in effect.
Okay.
It's been challenged a few times, but we've been able to maintain.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, so that money is based for each county on birth rates. So every county is different. So we get, you know, we get an X percentage of tax based on birth rates. And we began, in the beginning, we got about $2.1 million per year. We're down to about $1.4 million now. But
because of declining birth rate?
More the smoking rate, because it's also tied to taxes
purchasing.
And sales. Yeah,
gotcha.
And so in our county, it's been interesting. Every once, you know, the smoking rate's gone down, and that's the statewide rate or the purchase of sales. But every once in a while, our birth rate pops up, so we might maintain that money a little more. But in knowing that was going to be the case, each county commission was required to do a long-term financial plan, not just a strategic plan, but a financial plan. So back in 1999, when we got off the ground on this, our commission adopted a long-term 20-year financial plan, and it's really a roadmap on how we're spending down our money, so that we're not a typical public entity that spends all the money every year. We have really worked more like a business, and we know that we need that rainy day fund, and so we distribute money to children's programs for 0 to 5ers and their families. We have school readiness sites, one in Oceano that has preschools in it and child care in it and parent education classes in it. And another site we have up in Paso Robo at Georgia Brown, which is a similar program. We have...
And those are pretty much fully funded through First
they're
Five?
They're completely funded by First
okay.
Five, yeah. We have... we pay for... some extra oral health care through the WIC program. So that's a blended federal money with First Five money. We have a vision screening program that we're quite proud of. They screen all the little ones, thousands of kids every year. And a lot of most of it's done by volunteer optometrists around the county. And we found kids there that had vision problems that hadn't been identified, and they got help before they got to school. And we all know if you have better vision when you get to school, you're going to do better.
Learning and reading.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. that's a very small program that uses our money, but has been very, very effective over the years. We have Parents Helping Parents is a program that has libraries, lending libraries throughout the county that work with families who have children with special needs. And that's been sort of a program that doesn't take a lot of money, but that's affected a lot and done a lot of good for our community. We've got Babes program, which is a breastfeeding program, and actually we've connected a little bit with French Hospital on that, and Our breastfeeding, long-term breastfeeding rate is doing very well in our county, and we know that's always, the longer a mom can breastfeed, the better results in the end for the kid. When they're five, they're going to be more healthy and better ready and able to learn. So we have a variety of initiatives and programs that address health, early education and child care, parent education, special needs, and I'm leaving what?
You were say substance prenatal?
Oh, prenatal substance abuse. Yeah. So we actually started as a funder because that's where the money was. But as I said earlier.
So you kind of took the funds and then you would redistribute those funds to different programs.
Yes.
With the focus on 0 to 5.
Yeah. And actually some First Fives run programs in-house, and we decided long ago we didn't want to do that.
Right.
And so we've kept our organization very small, and we allow the experts in the field to do that.
Sure.
And I think that's worked out very well for us.
And then, Misty, the First Five also is involved in a lot of the community events and a lot of promotion and a lot of education, correct?
Yeah. It took a village to raise rights, I think it takes a village to do what we're doing on behalf of children. So we are engaged with partners and friends in the community who work on behalf of children for a number of events, and April certainly is a big month for us coming up. It will be Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month. So one of the things that I've enjoyed much about being on board with this group is that I've been able to interact with other folks and try to figure out how we can, again, take what we're doing separately and really make it a more cohesive approach so that we can kind of mesh all of these activities and invite everybody to be champions for our children during that month. So just a quick overview for anybody who's interested. Coming up in April, we have Hands on Heroes, which is an awards recognition program for those who work on behalf of children. Several different categories, I think family support, early education and care, a volunteer hero, and we recognize folks in our community who work in various capacities with children, so that's pretty exciting.
Are there still nominations for that?
Yes, absolutely.
And if so tell me a little bit about how that works.
There is an application process and basically a submittal through our website. So you're welcome to go.
We're also on Early Learning for All website.
Yeah.
So to get to the website, how would somebody do that?
There's firstfiveslow.org.
Okay.
And then you look up in the upper right corner, there's a banner.
Uh-huh.
Hands on Heroes, and you'll get right there.
And you just click the banner.
Yeah.
And those nominations are open till February 12th.
So, okay.
And that award center is slated right now for April 3rd. That was last year part of our Children's Summit. This year it's a separate event.
And I should add, we have Delaine Easton coming, who is a former state superintendent of schools, as the keynote this year. So we encourage folks who are interested to come listen to her. She's quite a celebrity
quite
for
a
us.
Speaker.
And quite a speaker. An advocate for children.
So for the hands-on heroes, can you give me an example of who's been nominated for that in the past? A teacher?
We've had owners of preschools whose parents nominated the person. We've had one of the physicians we have a health hero as well. One of the physicians at community health centers was our first year hero. Linda Hogaboom was our health hero last year, who
school
has
nurse.
Been a school nurse
forever. Known Linda forever. Yeah. And she's been
and she's a actually
going to
be there this year
for kids.
She truly and is missed, but I got her back to present the award this year.
Good for you.
So let's see, parent support have been folks that, for instance, will work with parents if they've got troubled kids or difficult kids,
right.
and so there's some of that.
So the application, they're explaining why they're nominating that person for a hands-on hero or a
It's a simple application, but has questions that you just answer. We've tried to make it real, real simple.
Okay.
But that's always a fun event. Lois Capps, for all the years we've done it, has always done a video congratulating the winners. And we have Cacho there a lot of the time since he was our chair most of these years. And so it's a real celebration, and it's celebrating unsung heroes. These are folks that it could be a janitor in a preschool that has done wonderful work to keep that school where it needs to be. I mean, we had a person nominated who actually last year assisted the slow housing authorities to go smoke free in their homes. He was in the health because he'd advocated for, because as we know, secondhand smoking is not good.
Right.
And so he was nominated as a health hero. So you get a little bit out, think of it a little bit outside of the box, and there's all sorts of heroes that, you know, they just don't often get recognized, and that's what this is for. It is specific to 0 to 5 kids. We also have a Champion for Youth Award, though, and Jim Brabeck was our first champion for youth. And, of course, you know, he's just done miraculous things for youth forever.
Absolutely.
And so it's just a great event that celebrates the good of our community.
Right.
And I have to say one of the most rewarding parts is watching the video montage of seeing these folks in action. And you're just reminded of the impact they have in the lives of little ones, but then how rewarded they are personally as a result of what they're doing every day. And that level of commitment is it's almost incomprehensible. It's amazing.
So what other things, Misty?
Well, of course, Child Care Planning Council is kind of spearheading the Children's Day in the plaza this year,
right,
which is on April 12th, on Saturday. So we're excited to be part of that and are also excited that our...
And that's encouraged for families to come out, activities for the kids, learning events for kids.
Right, a ridiculous amount of fun for everybody.
Yeah.
Overstimulation, it's awesome. But we are also going to have our statewide First Five Hands-On Health Express at that event as well, which is a wonderful interaction with families. I think the library is actually working on an early literacy training workshop where they're going to help try to train professionals on how to enhance learning through the use of technology for little ones and how to make that a good asset to the learning process. And then I know that Atascadero is having a child Day of the Child also as well, I think on April 28th. So those are just a few. And I know that there are numerous other ones going on. All of this is still taking shape, and we're just having those initial conversations to really lay out the roadmap for April. So exciting stuff to come.
Yeah, lots of things to look for. That's great. You are listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX Public Radio, serving Santa Barbara, San Luis Obispo, and Southern Monterey counties. A reminder, you can join us also on Facebook at KCBX FM. This American Life with Ira Glass will follow at 2 p.m. today. Always a good listen. And the voices you hear with me on the show are Susan Hughes and Misty Livengood, both of First Fives of San Luis Obispo County. We have about 15 minutes more in this program for your comments and questions for our topic of Children's Bill of Rights, First Five, or celebrating Children's Day. And you're welcome to call us at 781-3875. What about, you know, when we're talking about Children's Bill of Rights, everything that you guys went through putting that together with a whole host of people and stakeholders, is there anything that we haven't talked about with it that you really want to get out into the community to kind of leave as a message?
Well, I think one important thing to remember is that this conversation continues. And just like we put all these people around a table and said, hey, give us your input, give us your insight, you guys have a valuable stake in this, that is also true for the implementation phase. So we are still asking for input and ways to take this document and make it, giving it a daily difference according to curriculums and agencies and activities that are already going on. So I think dialogue is essential, and it's been one of the most beautiful components of this project from the get-go and is continuing in that direction. So if whatever we can do to, spark that interest or reach out to folks who want to learn more, we are absolutely willing and eager to do that.
So now that it's created, it's on your website. And again, tell me what the website is.
First5slow.org.
First5slow.org.
With the number 5.
Correct.
With the number
That's
5.
True.
Good
yes.
point. First,
not spelled out.
Number 5, slow.org. You can go there. You can download the Bill of Rights. Can anybody use it? I mean, do they need to ask permission? They can just take this Bill of Rights and say, I'm going to use this in my business plan, or I'm going to use this in my organization, and we're going to be planning our programming around Bill of Rights number 10. Can they do that?
Well, I think essentially, you know, what we're asking folks to do is to, yes, take make use of the materials that are available to them through our website, and as we continue to kind of cultivate them and tweak them a little bit. But beyond that, I think we would ask for feedback, too. We would love to know what you're doing, what you plan to do, and how we might be able to play a role in that process as well. So that's equally important to us. And yes, there is an endorsement sheet on that toolkit where individuals can sign an endorsement, or they can take it before an agency or a group. And we would love to know about that. And we've done numerous ones. I can't even count right now. I know as Susan mentioned, we just did the Department of Social Services. We have the library on board in a couple of months. We're looking at a Rotary Club in March. So we're out and about, and there are different ways that we can make that level of engagement according to what the needs are in that group, whether it's just a casual sending of the information or a physical presence of somebody from our team of folks who are, you know, well-versed in what the CBOR is for everyone. So.
Well, and you make a good point, because if what you're trying to do is you're trying to quantify some of this, mm-hmm. is this Bill of Rights having any impact? Are you able to follow up on any of it? You want to get feedback. Like,
and we want to celebrate
said.
And recognize those efforts that are underway.
Right.
As extensions of us, of everybody who's involved in putting this together.
Right. So if someone is deciding in their organization their goal is to work with Eat Healthy and Plentiful Meals Every Day, and that's going to be their focus, and they're going to be evaluating whether or not the activities that they've structured are making a difference in providing meals for children. You'd really like to have that data come back to you so you can incorporate it in your statistics.
Very definitely. As I said, I can remember one of the very first groups. We had five initial endorsers for the Bill of Rights when we first took it out. And one of those initial groups asked me, "What are you going to, you know, how do you know this is going to work?" And I went, "Oh," kind of deer in headlights like. And I said, "Good question. Well, you know, we need to figure all that out." And I think we have. But part of that is getting those stories back, getting feedback from those folks who are using and incorporating the rights in what they do every day. And again, measuring some of the indicators about kids in our community. So, and that's how, as it should be. First Five has always been interested. We always have part of the proposition was that we had to evaluate what we did and what we do. And so we know that we need to evaluate the impact that the Bill of Rights has on our community as well.
Well, I think like any bill, the bill itself is just written on the paper.
Yeah.
You know, it's really in the implementation and how you use whatever the words are. So I loved your idea about maybe a service group adopting one of the rights in terms of what they want to do. If there's a service group that focuses something on children, to make it that particular item that they're going to focus on for this year's presidency or whatever they do. So
yeah exactly. And we, you know, we Misty does a great road show. She shouldn't underestimate herself.
Is it relevant to this, Misty, or should that be a whole show in itself?
No, we are glad to go out working with Rotary Clubs right now, and any service club or anybody that needs a luncheon presentation, and there are many around our county, we're glad to do that for them. And then hopefully that will spark ideas within their organization on how they can actually implement. Especially for the youth service groups, this is perfect. Like you had mentioned, the Scouts or,
right.
you know, youth
organizations.
Or PTAs.
Or, you know, any kind of adult programs that are supporting kids. How do they get a hold of you?
They can call our office. They can email. It's all on our website. I would say that's probably the best resource
and
for
the
getting a hold of
again.
Us. Yes, it's firstfiveslow.org, the number five, not spelled out.
All right.
And we're all listed on there, and there's a general email to, you know, send comments or information as well. So
okay. And Susan, you had mentioned that, you know, this show is a part of Action for Healthy Communities, mm-hmm. and the Vital Signs report, the newest report that came out of that, is wonderful information for people who want to know what is the health in this community of children. You know, how are we doing? There are some measures in that. If you wanted to look at, You know, how are we doing in that area? There are some good tools there.
There is, and I was actually just very pleased and very pleased that the action has followed up the big book, as we call it, with the first folio called The Status of Children in Slo County. And
it's a little report.
It's a small user-friendly report, right. 8 or 9 pages long. All the data is out of action, but there is actually some additional data that we could find it outside of the action report, because we wanted to make it as current as possible. But it talks about the economics, basic needs, health, healthy lifestyles, education, safety of kids, and that's really, if you think and look at the rights, you look at the pieces in the folio, and they mirror quite nicely. One of the report actually opens up with this quote: "There can be no keener revelation of society's soul than the way it treats its children." From Nelson Mandela. What more can you say?
Yeah, yeah. And how we take care of our children really reflects how we're going to take care of anything.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's wonderful for you guys to have joined me. You have been listening to Central Coast Voices. I want to thank my guests, Susan Hughes, Executive Director, and Misty Livenhood, who is the Communications and Outreach Officer for First 5 San Luis Obispo County. Central Coast Voices is sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation in collaboration with KCBX Radio. The newest trend report for and by Action for Healthy Communities is called Vital Signs. We were just talking about that. And it's now available on the San Luis Obispo Foundation website at www.slocf.org, or you can Google San Luis Obispo Community Foundation. You're invited next week to join host Fred Monroe here on Central Coast Voices Thursday from 1 to 2. His guest will be Rick London, who is the CEO of United Way of San Luis Obispo County, and Eddie Taylor, who is the CEO of United Way Northern Santa Barbara County, as they talk about how their organizations serve their communities. And we've got just about 2 minutes to kind of wrap up any thoughts that you ladies have about what we want to get out there. So making sure that people come out for Children's Day.
Oh, certainly. I would just like to end with the fact that when you look at this project, the Children's Bill of Rights, and all of these different things that are wonderful things that are going on in our community, I think it's a real testament to folks here who, in the spirit of cooperation and collaboration. And I'm always amazed at it on a daily basis. And if people come to us for information through First 5, know that we're kind of the hub for this CBOR, but there are a number of individuals and agencies who are involved and have made this happen and who can speak to it as well. So we're kind of the streamlining agency of information on that, but can always put people in touch with the right resources as well.
Okay, so if people don't know whether or not there are services that are available,
correct,
get them there,
or have questions about the Children's Bill of Rights. You know, it is larger than us, but we are kind of the centralized location for getting people to the right
and
the
tell
right
me
resource.
Your website again.
It is first5slo.org with the number 5.
Okay. So. And Susan?
I just want to say thank you so much for having us today. We're the beginning of our second year doing this, and I hope that maybe we can come back next year and report on our results.
And you're going to have your first birthday for First 5 in April?
For the Bill of Rights.
For the Children's Bill of Rights, correct.
For the Bill of Rights. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much, ladies, for bringing this. Appreciate that. People can reach it on your website. Encourage they download it. My thanks to Misty and to Susan for joining me today. You've been listening to Central Coast Voices.